All right, and welcome to the Blacklist Sessions. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's going to be a great episode, this one. I'm really excited to have Julian on the podcast today. How are you?
Very well. Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here, and thank you.
Yeah, so I think the best way to start would be to get a little bit of an introduction. So what is it that you do?
Okay, my main activity is the Consensus Awards, and what we've done there now, it's in its 21st year. We actually evaluate innovative technology, locally designed in Australia and New Zealand. It's a very thorough process. It's proven over many, many years to be highly successful in identifying the innovative technologies locally designed and developed that have then gone on to be fantastic achievers worldwide. So it's a big achievement. The independent analysis shows that 9 out of 10 of the winners have gone on to do phenomenally well. So that's what I do. I'm often referred to as Mr. Innovation because of everything I do.
Yeah, awesome. So you've had some pretty successful companies that have come through the awards at some stage. I'd be keen to hear about some of the stories about these companies and
sure,
who they are.
Sure. There's probably three worth mentioning, but as I say, there's many, many, many more. Mm. And the ones that are sort of the household names now. And you've got to remember that we're actually evaluating technology when it's going into market. Mm-hmm. So basically, it has to be demonstrable. It doesn't have to, it could be a beta product, you know, but it's got to be demonstrable. And obviously, they have to basically show the judges the technology. Why is it innovative and what's its potential worldwide? Mm-hmm. And we use a lot of other measures as well. So we look at, for example, you know, its architecture, its design, its scalability,
yep,
their market strategy as well. And we also look at the people behind it. So if you get three ticks in the boxes, they win an award. So the most important thing about it is, number one, there is no set number of awards. It's not a competition. You know, we're not singling out one to be the winner. There'll be any number of winners out of each award program, and we now have 12 awards programs. But to your point about success, you know, ones that are really well known, and if you go back to 2004, very highly successful year for us, because that was the year when both Atlassian won an award and WiseTech Global. And my background is software development and running the awards program. But the thing is that I identified the Atlassian product, their first product, which is Jira. It's a project management tool for software developers. And I saw it. And at the time, Mike's dad was paying the rent on a tiny little office upstairs opposite the Queen Victoria building in Sydney.
Yep.
And a couple of their mates from university were helping with the coding. So there's Mike Cannon-Brooks and Scott Farquhar are the founders, and they're busy doing all this stuff. And they had three customers using their beta product. And they hadn't sold the technology. And I encourage them to enter, and as I say, the rest is history. You know, it's close on, what, $45 billion on the US, on the NASDAQ.
Yeah, worth a few bucks now.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the other one is Richard White at WiseTech Global. Richard is a really hands-on, you know, good technical guru and fantastic CEO, a great leader. And I think now they're up to about 3,000 staff based in Sydney.
Yep.
And most of them in the US, I believe, in the Chicago area. And the point there is that Richard used the awards process to basically take stock of where he was with his technology at the moment, because we have large judging panels. So getting a large number of independent judges to evaluate technology and get that feedback as to whether he was at the right stage to go to market, and also to validate his go-to-market strategy as well.
Yeah, well, it's a great idea. Like, just on that front alone, to be able to just get access to like all of the insight across the industry.
Absolutely.
Like, that's such a big thing.
Absolutely. Well, across the awards programs now, we have, I added them up at the last weekend, 188 judges. all people from industry. So, obviously, you know, they don't all judge every single award. Mm-hmm. You know, we have those that are in the Consensus Software Awards, the Innovation Awards, the Green Tech Awards, mm-hmm. now the Ag Tech Awards, the Med Tech Awards. So, of course, you've got to have subject matter experts in all of those different awards programs. And I'll say within each of those awards programs, there can be any number of winners. So anyway, Richard presented our awards just back in December. Mm-hmm. It's great to have him there. And he stood up and talked about the validation that he got from the judges. And that's where he sort of put the foot down and said, right, now let's go to market. And his market value has gone up and down a fair bit on the ASX, but it was close to $35 at one stage.
Yep.
Well, it's fallen back off that, but I anticipate it going way back up there. And once this current issues are the coronavirus are all over and everything. But it's worth mentioning another one because it's hardly ever known or talked about here in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a product called Banks, B-A-N-C-S.
Yep.
And it was developed by a company in North Sydney called Financial Network Services.
Yep.
And they won in 2008. And it's Banks is a totally integrated banking solution for second tier banks.
Yep.
And having won the award, they really, really leveraged off it. Some leverage off it better than others.
Yep.
But they really milked it. And they went at the Asian market where there is a huge number, obviously, of second tier banks.
Mm.
And within only 3 years, they're turning over about $30 million. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive numbers.
But what happened is Tata Consulting Services in India, that's the world's biggest consulting firm, TCS, they saw it at one of their clients.
Mm-hmm.
So they bought the technology for 10 times revenue.
Yep.
So the founders went away, thank you very much, with 300 mil. But the important thing there is that today it's responsible for about 40% of TCS's worldwide revenue.
Wow, so it was a pretty good purchase for them.
Huge, absolutely huge.
Yeah, massive. Yeah. Well, I love technology. I think it's fantastic. And I think it's great, like, with what you're doing with the awards, like giving a lot of people, I guess, a platform to really validate their idea. Because it is one thing to come up with a really good idea, but to know whether it's actually got legs in the market is such a big thing and is probably even more important than the actual idea, to
be honest. Absolutely right. Well, we do a lot of support for the winners. And we're pretty well connected with various people in the industry, potential investors. And the point I made earlier on, you know, 9 out of 10 success rate, why wouldn't you want to invest in a winner of a consensus award? Because the judges get it right year on year on year. So we're actually setting up our own venture capital fund at the moment to specifically just invest in the winners.
In the winners.
That makes sense. But the other thing is that we also provide them with a lot of other services as well.
Mm-hmm.
So market development, sales, you know, structuring their organisation to go from where they're currently at to how they expand worldwide. A whole range of other services are provided through our, if you like, our sister companies.
Yep.
And the people we can rely upon to take them from here to there going forward.
So yeah, it's really good. They're fantastic tools to have because I know, you know, one person or a couple of people, they can't be good at every single thing that it takes to run a business. So having access to a lot of those different things like sales and marketing and having people that are really clued into that area is such a great advantage.
Absolutely right. Well, interesting enough, you know, we ran the awards up until the end of 2018. It was an annual awards program,
mm-hmm.
but we stepped that up last year. And we ran it twice last year. We're doing that this year as well. And although we have, obviously, the coronavirus to deal with, we've done the testing and everything, and our judges are happy. And we're going to do all of the presentations, the final presentations, where the final decisions are made on online.
Yeah.
So it'll be through teleconference. We'll be using Zoom to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also be making the announcements of the winners online as well.
Yeah.
But we're very well connected in the technology space through journalists and editors. And because one of our awards programs is the IT Writers Awards.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been running that for 20 years ourselves, and it started 5 years prior to that. So 25 years of running the IT Professional Awards. sorry, the RTU Writers Awards. And the point there is that you actually end up with very good, you know, conduit to get the messages out. Mm-hmm. But we also ask each entrant in the entry form, which publications do they want to target if they win the award? And, of course, we know that in advance.
Yeah.
So if they are going to win the award, we actually line up to get media releases up, ready to go out to whether it's the retail market or the agriculture market or whatever, so they get as much coverage as they can. And this year, because of the issues we've had with the virus, mm-hmm. we're also setting up our own YouTube channel.
Yep.
So we're going to get all of the winners to actually post a 3 to 4 minute video as well. So when the media release goes out, it will actually then point to that website.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, that's a great idea. It's been really interesting to watch how the coronavirus has really changed the landscape of business, because obviously we've heard a lot about the people that have lost out, like a lot of people have lost their jobs and been laid off.
Yep.
But it's been really interesting to see how things have changed and how other companies have started to win. Like, for example, there's a gaming platform, Steam, and they've seen a massive increase in people that have come onto that platform. And same thing with companies like, say, Activision, Blizzard. Like, I can see their revenue probably increasing due to this. So it's really interesting. I guess you'd call it maybe the Amazonification of a lot of industries of really going online.
Yep. Well, look, I agree entirely. And there are some organizations, you mentioned one there in particular, but there are others that I'm aware of that were finding it hard to go to market.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the change of where what people are doing, they're actually lifting their game considerably. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And even within my own business, because I do a lot of video production and music videos and different things like that, because all venues have been shut down and, you know, I can no longer gig as a musician, I've had to pivot a little bit. And in this case, it's forced me to develop skills in live streaming. So we've actually got a lot of live streaming concerts booked in that we can actually do. So it's opened up a whole new revenue stream there, just so people
Fantastic.
Can basically get their music out to people without it having to like see it in person because of the current circumstance.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
You know, there's always a way, I think.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So, the other thing that's worth mentioning is that, as I say, we're running the awards twice this year. The current schedule is we get entries in by the end of this month, by the end of April. We do the judging in May and then announce the awards early in June.
Yep.
We'll then be open again in July for the next 6 months as well. And the aim is to have a big gala dinner, which we normally have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We had two last year. But to make it really big, and what we'll actually do is invite all the winners from this current 6 months along to that as well. So they're actually on stage, actually being, if you like, sort of co-presented again, which is really nice. And we always get a senior minister, mm-hmm. typically a federal minister, sometimes shadow minister, but that's very relevant to our technology space. So it's always a big event. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. You know, technology is such an important part, I think, of the economy. And I've said on previous podcasts that I'd love to see Australia innovate a little bit more. I think because we've obviously got America, who's a massive innovator over there. And I would love to see the government perhaps put a little bit more, I guess, I'm not sure what the right word is, but a little bit more like emphasis on just growing a real technological base here, because we've invented so many amazing things like Wi-Fi is an Australian invention and, you know, there's countless others. So, I think it would be something really great for Australia. So, it's great that you have something going on here that really contributes to that.
Yeah, I think also, like, you know, we've been doing this, I say, many, many years, two decades now. Mm. And at the end of the day, you know, successive governments come in and make statements about innovation and what they're going to do. Nothing ever happens. You know, it's basically saying that, you know, we are innovative, yeah. There's a huge amount of innovative people in Australia. To your point, we need to encourage them. We need to actually get better presence as to what they're doing, and also collaboration, because somebody might have a great idea, great innovation, but they don't necessarily know how to take it to market.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we come in, because we can actually team up other people as well. So there is can't say the name at the moment, but there's an entrant actually entering this current time, entering in by the end of April,
mm-hmm.
and they're in the logistics space. And if they win, the first thing I'll be doing is introducing them to Richard White.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
because there's a synergy between those organisations. Because,
yeah, it really is about the connection and the network. And I know a lot of folks are like, oh, you know, I just don't know how to build the network. Like, what would you suggest to someone that's got a really good business idea, they've kind of tested it out a bit and they think it's going to be quite well? How would you say to those, like someone like that, to really get out and network with the right people? What should they do?
Well, the thing I'm always very conscious of is you've got to run your idea past a minimum of 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
To critique it. If you ask two or three people, you might say, yeah, this is, looks great. But if you actually go through the whole process of mixing it, going out there and talking to at least 10 people, you'll get a great lot of feedback to actually make the decision as to whether it's worth going forward.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is find a mentor in your market space, because that person will be invaluable. And you know, mentors often do it for nothing, you know, mm-hmm. because they want to see there's new innovations happening and everything. And I'd say probably out of our judges, I'd say 180-odd people, I'd say at least 30 or so are mentors within our community there that we can team up with.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. So, yeah, that was going to be my next question, was how would they go about getting a mentor? So the best thing would be, like, perhaps to talk to you and
absolutely.
You could tee them up with someone in the appropriate space.
Very happy to do that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So, you come from a software development background. What was it that really drew you to software that you found, like, really interesting in the beginning?
Yeah, well, back in the UK, I did a business studies degree and went straight into the computing industry.
Mm-hmm.
So in 78, I joined a large American computer firm called Burroughs. And mm-hmm. in those days, there was IBM, there was Burroughs, and Univac. There were three major players. And later on, Burroughs and Univac merged to become Unisys, which is still around today.
Yes.
But anyway, I was on the road selling solutions. And in 3 years, I bought my first property in the UK. Highly successful. It's when the technology, you know, computers are really taking off.
Mm-hmm.
And I then left there and actually joined Oxford University Press,
mm-hmm.
you know, the book publishers.
Yeah.
And I actually managed to get a very lucrative 18-month contract with them. So they were setting up a greenfield site in the northern England. So Midlands, I should say, and moving all their operations from Oxford up to there because they had lots of union problems. So there was a greenfield site
mm-hmm.
up in Corby in Northamptonshire, and I was there at least 6 months before the building was to be opened, responsible for putting all the computer systems in. And they were Burroughs computers, that's mm-hmm. why I got the job.
Yeah.
And liaising with the guys back at head office. And responsible for putting all the terminals in, everything else like that. And then all the books were brought up in trucks every day into the warehouse.
Yep.
So I was actually involved in actually the development of the software.
Yeah, right.
There wasn't a solution around for them. And that's what sort of whetted my appetite more in the software development side. And after that contract, which was delivered on time, on budget, fantastic, and I mm-hmm. got a bonus, which is great.
Yep.
I then joined a systems development house, IBM Systems Development House in North London. And that was also pure. They were a big software development firm as well.
Yeah.
And again, I was going out selling their solutions. And then when I came, I was a member of the British Computer Society. When I came out to Australia, I transferred my membership to the ACS, Australian Computer Society, and put a lot back into industry.
Mm-hmm.
I was a mentor in those days for a few people.
Yeah.
And what then happened was the market sort of much more shifted in terms of quality. And I was one of the first members of the Software Quality Association in Australia.
Yep.
So a big focus on making sure that, okay, you're writing software, but you want to make sure it's quality software. And so there was the Software Quality Association, the Software Metrics Association, measuring metrics around doing software development,
mm-hmm.
and a few others. And I've been involved in that ever since. So I've been involved. It's now called QESP, Q-E-S-P, QESP.org. And, you know, that is there primarily to make sure that software development is regimented.
Yep.
It's documented. It's built to the right quality standards. And you're measuring the metrics as you go as well.
Yeah, well, it really is such an amazing field, software development, because it's going to rule the world. Like, yep, with the right software, the things you Absolutely. Can do are unbelievable. So what are some of the trends that you've sort of seen over the last 10 years or so in the software space that you see as kind of continuing to go along?
Yeah, so if you go back to when we started the awards in 1999, most of the applications being put forward were sort of mid-range style. You know, PCs weren't around particularly. They weren't mainstream anyway. Certainly there were no mobile devices. And it's quite interesting because over the years, a lot of those technologies that are sort of in that space are the ones that have been highly, highly successful. But now, of course, you're seeing a high input of new applications, new apps, because everyone's saying, I've got to build an app for this, I've got to build an app for that. At the end of the day, you've got to have a solid solution which has a solid back end. The app is the actual interface device wherever you're using. But the most important thing is the core technology is actually in the database itself, the technology itself that's actually driving the application. So we've seen those changes, and of course most of what we get now is applications that are highly automated. There's a lot more artificial intelligence being built into it. That goes with machine learning and things like chatbots and a whole range of things like that. And of course it's all software driven, so to your point, it's going to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's been quite amazing to see how much the world has changed, like even in my life. Like, I'm 28 now, and like going back to like the Windows 95 computers, and you'd get on there and the dial-up internet is really, really slow, and how quickly things have progressed and changed. But yeah, to what you were saying, like something that I think is really important, like for my business, is always to go from a solution and then work backwards. You know, what is the person's problem? Absolutely. How do they want to fix that problem, and then basically work backwards from there?
Yep. Look, to your point, there are a lot of people that have a great idea, and it's a solution looking for a problem. To your point, you've really got to go out there and say, what is the problem that we want to address?
Yes.
So there is a market for what you're developing. And we do a lot of screening for the awards. We want to make sure that, of course, everybody that's coming through our process, which I say is very rigorous, has a chance of winning an award. So myself and two others, we actually do a lot of screening to actually say, is this technology ready to go through this process? And it's quite interesting, the number that we do knock back, it's probably at least half.
Yep.
Yeah? And some of those will come back later on. But we are a very good sounding board, because we look at exactly that, is what's it actually going to deliver for the customer? At the end of the day, if the customer's not going to buy it, why the hell are you doing it?
Exactly.
And the other point is as well, is a lot of people have not done their research in terms of their market sector. And therefore, they're trying to develop something that's very similar to something that's already out there in the marketplace. And we provide guidance on that as well.
Yeah, no, that's a really important point there, because if something's already developed, like, unless you're doing it better, faster, cheaper, then
Absolutely
there's not
right.
much point. So what are some of the things that you see, like, people getting wrong? Like, they submit their idea and, you know, like you guys see it and you're like, okay, well, this might have legs, but it's probably got a little bit of a way to go. Like, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see there?
Yeah, look, it's mostly to do with not fully understanding your competitors. Yep. So, to the point I just made, you know, you're obviously looking to develop a solution that has some customers are going to buy it. But at the end of the day, some markets are already quite crowded. Number one, it's innovative, therefore you can differentiate it. But you've really got to understand what potential market can you actually drive, and what's your channel going to be? Are you going to go out there and sell direct? Are you going to actually work with channel partners to take it to market? All those questions need to be answered. And going forward, of course, you then want to say, well, yeah, other people in the industry, like industry market sectors, there are many industry associations. So in agriculture, there are three. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you have a product in that space, you'd be a fool if you didn't actually go and spend time with each of those three industry associations and actually talk to them. So at least, you know, I said talk to 10 people. Three of those should be people in those industry associations where they know the market far, far, far better than you do.
Yeah, and they would definitely know what the real problems are. And that's really what it comes back to at the end of the day.
Yep, I think so. And we see a lot of a rise now, certainly here in Australia and New Zealand, of a lot of intelligent agriculture technologies coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's things like monitoring and everything else like that, but there's a lot more technology driving the production from way to go. You know, all the various different stages of, you know, plant growth and maximising, you know, filtering, you know, a whole range of things.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. So I think you'd be in a good position being in software development as a background. Now, a lot of people talk about AI and a lot of people talk about quantum computing. And I think a lot of people don't realise how much quantum computing, when fully implemented, is going to change the game for a number of different fields, like, probably vaccine research and different things like that. So how much of an impact do you see, well, in particular quantum computing having an impact and changing what this world looks like?
Yeah, it's been a couple of comments on that, because, you know, in my career I've seen the introduction of supercomputers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting because now the quantum computers are, you know, X times bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is that with everybody, the vast majority of people now being online, and here's the test, of course, with the coronavirus. You know, it's putting a lot of pressure on the existing systems. And the point is that the quantum computing is a requirement. You know, we talk about, obviously, the growth of the amount of memory on chips and everything else like that.
Yep.
The Moore's Law. Mm-hmm. Well, we're exceeding Moore's Law at the moment. You know, we've actually gone beyond that with the introduction of supercomputers, then obviously now with quantum computers and whatever. It's needed. It's necessary, because simulation is very important in many fields.
Mm.
And the other point I'd make as well is that if the coronavirus had come through 5 years ago, we would have been in a far, far, far worse state than we are today.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say that is that the advance of technology in the last 5 years has enabled us to actually allow people to work from home. You know, there is enough bandwidth. Even apparently the NBN is staying okay, you know. but at the end of the day, if that wasn't in place, and it wasn't in place 5 years ago, and the coronavirus had come through then, what on earth would we be doing?
Jeez, yeah, you'd probably see an even worse economic downturn.
Absolutely.
I know for myself, like, I still have a lot of work that I can do at home, like in terms of editing and things like that. But, like, being able to upload stuff to the internet, like, you know, 5 years ago, I would have had a lot more dramas than I do today.
Absolutely. Like, you know, just sharing large files with people, you know, just stick it up in the cloud or whatever, and then they can download it, you know. That, again, that wasn't available 5 years ago.
Yeah, amazing. So for someone that has, like, a really basic understanding of quantum computing, what are some of the fields, like you mentioned simulation, what are some of the fields that are really going to benefit and completely change thanks to quantum computers?
Well, I think there'll be another stage of research. And I say that from a point of view of the current virus, is the fact that, you know, around the world, there are the leading laboratories, and we have one here in Australia, are working around the clock to actually obviously come up with a vaccine and everything else like that. And I think it was only about 2 weeks after the coronavirus started in China that the laboratory here in I think it's in Melbourne, I'm sure I'll say, they actually simulated COVID-19.
Yep.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
But it's because they have the technology. And obviously, advance of technology is going to allow for more and more and more of that to happen. So that's one area, us to, as a worldwide community, to respond to threats like that, biological threats, and they will continue. You can foresee that going forward, there may be another strain of COVID-19 next year. You know, so obviously around the world, we'll make sure that we try and eradicate it as much as possible. But the fact is, it could come back. And that's where that technology is going to be enabled dramatically and very quickly. Because wherever it hits around the world can jump on it. And there's enough computing power there to do it. And the other side is just research. When I say that, research into new markets. You know, we're all obviously, you know, connected, yeah?
Yep.
But there's obviously a lot of people that are using what we call push technology now. So I'm obviously told as I'm walking down or through a shopping mall, what are the best deals I can get here or whatever. There's going to be much more research into individuals and groups of people buying patterns. And, of course, the extra computing power is going to allow for that as well.
Yeah, so it's really on that front about collecting a lot more data points. And, you know, the more data points you've got, the more you can do with AI and the more you can... Yeah, it's just... yeah, it's pretty amazing, like how much data, you know, you can collect. And I guess with more computing power, the more things you can collect, and at the end of the day, get a more accurate result, so you can target marketing better, and, you know, a whole heap of different things.
I think it's worth saying as well that it was a chance meeting with my colleague who set up Consensus with me. And I didn't envisage then that Terry's not with the business anymore, because he left in 2007. But the point there is, it was a chance meeting, and it was a good networking opportunity. I met him socially.
Yep.
And we just explored ideas. You know, my background being software development, his background, he was running a previous awards program at Standards Australia, which is the Australian Design Award, so physical design. Yeah, it might be a new kettle or a new chair or whatever. Not technology-based, but anyway, I said to Terry in the middle of 1998, you know, how about setting up a company? You know, I've got the background of technology. You know how to run an awards program. Let's get together.
Bind the two.
So you never know how these things are going to happen. The most important is get out there and do lots of networking. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, that's such a great point. And something that I mention every now and then is about creativity. And it's basically about getting two things that already exist and then combining them in a new way.
Correct.
You know, and it sounds like this is why it's been so successful. It's been new and innovative and exciting from two quite different worlds.
Correct. And what we like to see as well is that we actually allow our winners over the 20 years to network with each other as well. So I know there's been at least three collaborations that have come out of previous winners saying, well, we're doing this, you're doing that. How about we work together and put together something other solution, which is fantastic.
Brilliant. Yeah, technology really is the answer, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely the way to go.
It's quite interesting because I checked just recently, but in the first year, there were 12 finalists, there were 5 winners. And that was just, we had started with the Consensus Software Awards. And, you know, 5 winners, 4 of those technologies are still around today.
Wow.
That's amazing. It just speaks for itself. You know, the fact the judges said, yep, these are all highly innovative, have great worldwide potential. You know, absolutely fantastic. And that's been the trend all the way through.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Oh, well, it's been so great to have you on the podcast and hear your insight and hear about the awards. So what's the best way to get in contact with you? And let's say there's a business that's interested in entering the Consensus Awards.
Well, there's a fair bit of information on the website.
Yep.
So that's consensus.com.au.
Yep.
My email, personal email, is julian.day@consensus.com.au. So happy to receive an email from you. Or you can give me a call, 0413-309-056.
Fantastic. Well, it's been really great to hear your insight. What are some of your goals for the future? What do you want to achieve?
Well, we've been highly successful here in Australia and a little bit in New Zealand. We do a lot of studying to see what other awards programs are happening around the world, or research ourselves. And the fact is, there's nothing like the consensus model, the rigorous process that we adopted from day one, and that allows for multiple winners, etc. A whole range of things that we do are very different. Because if you look at most awards programs, typically they actually have categories, and the judges will decide that that's the winner in that category. Whereas we look at, judges look at all of them and decide out of all of them how many winners there are. And a large number of judges, as I said. But the other thing there is that the opportunity, I've got three previous judges now in the US. And two of them will put their hands up to say they're happy to help set up consensus in the US. I've got the same thing in Singapore. I've got two previous winners running their businesses. Because they started here, then they obviously expanded and then have their head office based out of Singapore. They're actually saying, well, we'll actually do the same thing. We'll help establish consensus over there. So to your question there, you know, what's happening in the next 5 years? I'd like to see consensus spread around the globe, probably to as probably as many as a dozen countries. Then think about the collaboration that can be done between winners.
Incredible. Yeah, it sounds like a really amazing goal. So I hope you guys achieve it. And I think you will, because it's it's done really well here. So yeah, it's a good test to it's a good I guess a breeding ground for the entire world. Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on.
Real pleasure.
Any last piece of business advice that you can give to anyone?
No, I think that one thing about, if you've got a great idea, number one, go and talk to at least 10 people.
Yeah.
Happy to be a mentor. There's many of them within our community. And the third thing is, make sure that you have enough money to take you through the initial development phase. Because many people come with a great idea, but then overlook the fact that they probably need about $30,000, which might not sound much, but it is a lot to some people, to actually get it to a stage where it's demonstrable, that people actually do believe that it actually could potentially go to market.
Fantastic. Some great insight there. So, thank you guys for tuning in. It's been great chatting to Julian about the Consensus Awards. So, if you have a great business idea, please get in contact with him. The awards are doing some incredible things, and they've had some big winners. So, thank you guys for tuning in, and stay tuned. We've got a few great episodes coming up in the future.